This is Talking to America. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. Our guest today is David Kodrea. David is the, would you say the author, David, of The War on Guns, a blog?
I guess that's as good a term as any, yeah.
Okay. Why don't we start by talking about your blog, The War on Guns?
Okay, sure, thank you. The URL for that is waronguns.blogspot.com. And basically what I try to do with this is use it to comment on gun rights-related news stories, things of interest to the gun-owning community, particularly those who are interested in the liberty aspect of it. I use it to present original commentary. I use it to support various causes that I believe in that are Second Amendment-related. I also use it to promote my column in Guns Magazine. I have a couple of recurring features on the blog. One of them is called The Only Ones. And what this is about is that oftentimes, I'm sure you've heard, people will say, well, the police are the only ones who are competent or trustworthy enough to be armed, and the general citizenry isn't trained enough. And the purpose of the only ones really is not to diss the law enforcement establishment so much as to provide links to examples in news stories where they prove themselves to be just as fallible, if not more so, than anyone else, and essentially to disprove the fraud that the police are the only ones who are competent enough to be trusted with firearms. And where we got the name from that is, I don't know if you recall, the DEA agent by the name of Lee Page, who was giving a presentation to a group of school children in a classroom, and he pulls out his Glock and he says, I'm the only one in the room professional enough to handle this, and proceeds on camera to shoot himself in the foot. So the only one's kind of stuck, and right now I just have hundreds and hundreds of examples of that on the website.
Sounds fascinating. Before we forget, you have a monthly column in Guns Magazine. It's called Rights Watch?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you for mentioning that one. I started out writing actually for Guns and Ammo and did that on an occasional basis for probably about a year and a half or two. Moved on to Handguns Magazine when the editor, Jeff John, went over to that magazine. And then he went over to Guns, and he invited me to come on board full-time. So I am a Rights Watch columnist. I guess the official title in the masthead is Contributing Field Editor. And what I do with that is they let me explore whatever issue I really think needs to be brought to the attention of the readership as it pertains to the Second Amendment. And I try to do these things in a way that's contemporary, in a way that touches on the popular culture so that people can relate to it, kind of a shallow end of the pool approach, a populist approach, if you will. And I explore everything from celebrities and their anti-gun status to legal developments. The issue that's out right now on the stands is the February 2007 issue. And in this one, I feature a system developed by some friends of mine, Brian Puckett and Russ Howard, and it's called the BID system. And what this is, it's the Blind Identification Database System. It's an alternative that they've developed to the NICS, the National Instant Check System. And essentially what it does is it's already in practice at our airline terminals. It's called the no-fly list. What this allows is right now, if you go and buy a gun and go through the NICS system, they have to put you through an automated clearance, and it creates a record of your gun purchase. So now the government has a record that could, although right now it's prohibited by law, to be used to establish a registration system. If that law were to change, they would have all the data they need to identify gun owners in America and to essentially have an automated registration list that they can use. And I think that your organization has been pretty instrumental in pointing out some of the dangers of registration.
Well, indeed. I think that what we really need to do in America, the BID system is a step in the right direction, but from the JPFO perspective, I think we need to abolish all federal control and regulation of firearms. And nothing but evil has come out of the 68 Gun Control Act.
I agree with you on that. What I'm looking at is a way to do it. You know, one of the things that I'm attacked on sometimes is that I'm an absolutist and that we got here incrementally and we have to back out of things incrementally. And so this actually, I admit that there is no federal authority for any kind of FedGov involvement in registration in gun control. It's identical to the JPFO's position, but this is kind of a back at you guys. If you're saying we need incrementalism, Here's one that will impose no new restrictions on gun owners. It will actually roll restrictions back. All that is going to be in the database are who are identified as quote-unquote prohibited persons. Now, we could get into a whole other discussion on prohibited persons. I think it's a ridiculous concept. I think if someone can't be trusted with a gun, they can't be trusted without a custodian. However, as long as we have a system in place, unless there is a realistic mechanism to go through and abolish, and I'm certainly willing to learn how we can go about abolishing the ATF short of some sort of lawsuit or short of some sort of electoral victory that I'm not sure I see happening in the near-time future, this is at least a step that will roll back some of the more egregious violations. And as I say, the technology is there, and the concept has already been proven via the no-fly list.
Well, I think the way to abolish the BATFE, we're going to show people in our film that we're now working on called The Gang, which shows the criminal activities of the BATF. I think people will see a way in there, a method to approach the criminals known as the BATF, and that method will help people understand what steps have to be taken to abolish this government agency, as well as the federal control and regulation of firearms. But we'll wait till the movie comes out for me to continue to prattle on about that. And your column, Rights Watch in Guns Magazine, you mentioned you have a review on a book by Matthew Bracken called The Reconquista.
Yes.
Well, it's not really a Second Amendment issue. You want to talk about that for a minute or so?
Well, it essentially is a Second Amendment issue because it's a sequel to his first book, Enemies Foreign and Domestic. And in that book, he establishes the character base, he establishes the scenario with a rogue ATF agency creating a criminal act which is used to further demands for gun control. And he explores that, and Domestic Enemies, the Reconquista, definitely is a Second Amendment issue because the bottom line is if the illegal immigration tide in this country is not swarmed, we're quickly going to find ourselves in a balkanized situation, and we're quickly going to find ourselves in a situation where, in many locales, civil order is going to break down, people are going to be on their own, and people are going to be on their own against organized groups. I don't believe that it's that far-fetched when we take a look at other world events that have happened when disparate populations are competing for the same territory, and when we see the trends that have happened in this country, to think that, you know what, at some point in the future, there could be flashpoints. And that's what this book explores. I think it's an important book. I think as far as JPFO is concerned, possibly his first book, Enemies Foreign and Domestic, would be something that would be of more interest to your members. But I think once you have that as the foundation established, I think that people are going to really like The Reconquista, which is the sequel. And I should say that Matthew Bracken, the author of these books, eminently qualified to do the writing on this. They're page-turners. They're real thrillers. But he's got a fascinating background. He's a former Navy SEAL. He builds his own sailboats and sails them, I guess, essentially around the world. So the guy is a real fascinating character, and he comes from a perspective with a real intimate knowledge of weaponry, with some good, fresh political perspectives. And like I say, he's just a good writer. I really do enjoy reading his stuff, and I've reviewed both of his books in Guns Magazine, and given them two M1 thumbs up, if people understand what that means. Just to touch back, though, Aaron, on the JPFO film that you folks are going to make, I would hope that when it comes time to release it, you'll let me do a review for you.
Oh, I'd be delighted. Let me talk to you about a case that is now floating around the justice system called the Fincher case, I believe, the Wayne Fincher case in Arkansas.
Yes.
I noticed some comments that we've discussed about this, and maybe you'd like to shed some light on how outrageous this case is.
Yes. Wayne Fincher is a member of, he's a lieutenant commander of a militia in Arkansas. And I know when people say that, a lot of people's antennas go up and they go, wait a minute, we're going to turn off. We don't want to be associated with this. He's an honest man. He's a patriot. He has developed a legal document that he calls the Silver Bullet, and it fairly repudiates the ATF authority. and the authority of the government to essentially limit the arms that are available to the people. It's a challenge to the current interpretation of Miller. It's a challenge to the collective rights interpretation. And Wayne is in trouble right now because they arrested him, and he's in jail in the Sebastian County Jail down there. And one of the other things that I bring up on my blog is a concept called authorized journalists, and essentially where that came from is the government saying, well, bloggers aren't authorized journalists, they don't have press cards, they're not as good as real journalists. And yet so much of what's happening in terms of breaking news that's important for liberty activists is suppressed in the mainstream media. They'll present news stories with thinly disguised editorial commentary. They'll choose what to present and what to omit. And in many cases, they'll choose to neglect the story altogether. And with very limited exceptions for some local press down there, the Fincher case is being virtually ignored. It's off the radar. And one of the reasons it concerns me is because I'm getting updates right now from some of the people involved. Wayne is now ill. Wayne has had to be taken to the hospital. At first, they thought it was a heart attack. They've released him from the hospital. I just got word this morning that he is having, it's taking 31 hours to get him his anti-nausea medicine. Aaron, you know what? If the mainstream media got wind of the fact that medication was being withheld from prisoners at Gitmo, they would be all over it, screaming with headlines. Here's an American who is imprisoned under the authority of the federal government, and this man can't get his medication, and in order to get his medical records, his attorney has been told he's going to have to go to the judge and file a subpoena. Now, I just got a letter from Wayne Fincher. I wrote him in jail, and at first it got rejected because I committed the crime of sending him some writing paper and some stamps and some envelopes, thinking that this might be useful to him. And they sent the whole envelope back and wouldn't forward my letter on to him for that egregious sin. So I resent it with just the letter and with some information to let him know that, you know what, you're not forgotten. People are thinking about you. I'm covering you myself on my blog. And this, because I think I told you before this interview started, our internet is down right here. I'm going to give it to you before I give it to anybody else. This is just a brief couple sentences from his letter about his arrest. And he says, at my arrest, I had just come down from a deer stand that is about 20 feet to the bottom of the platform when two agents in full camo shouted from behind me to get down on the ground or they would shoot. I told them, if you just have to kill somebody, go ahead and shoot. I haven't done anything wrong, and I'm not getting on the ground. I then ordered them to take your guns off me, which they did. They were a bit taken aback. Okay, so this is kind of what went down at the Fincher arrest scene. And the other point I'd like to make about this is that Wayne was arrested under the auspices of Project Safe Neighborhoods. This is a federal program that's heavily backed not only by the Bush administration, but also, as you know, by the National Rifle Association, of which I am a life member.
Do you mind talking more about this issue, about the NRA and Project Safe Neighborhoods?
Well, there are a lot of NRA issues I could discuss, but I'd like to preface that first, because I've been accused in the past of NRA bashing, okay? And as I indicated, I am the NRA, Aaron. I'm a life member, okay? What I do is I speak out when I have policy differences with NRA's paid management and with their staff, and essentially what I hold them to is the same standard I hold a politician to. I hold a politician to fidelity to our Constitution. I hold the NRA to fidelity to their bylaws. And if I could, again, you know, I just read you a brief paragraph. I'd like to read you another brief paragraph, if that's okay. And that's from the purposes and objectives of their bylaws. You know, the first thing they do is they state that they're going to be called the National Rifle Association of America. Then the very next thing they say is that the purposes and objectives of the National Rifle Association of America are, one, to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, especially with reference to the inalienable right of the individual American citizen guaranteed by such Constitution to acquire, possess, collect, exhibit, transport, carry, transfer ownership of, and enjoy the right to use firearms in order that the people may always be in a position to exercise their legitimate individual rights of self-preservation and defense of family, person, and property, as well as to serve effectively in the appropriate militia for the common defense of the Republic and the individual liberty of its citizens. That's my benchmark for the NRA. That's what I expect its management to promote. That's what I expect its staff to promote. And so people who want to criticize me for taking on NRA political statements or public policy statements that contradict that, I guess my rejoinder to them is, tell me where my criticism is untrue. And to give you a couple examples of that, when they say enforce existing gun laws, well, hold the phone. You know, I understand shall not be infringed. I understand the people. So what existing gun laws are we determining to be constitutional and to pass that constitutional bright line of shall not be infringed? And I guess the most common rejoinder I have is that enforcing existing gun laws is precisely what the government was doing at Ruby Ridge and Waco. And when I hear the association say things like gun-free school zones, that no one but trained police and security officers ought to possess a gun on a school campus, again, I don't see anything in the Constitution that limits my right to keep and bear arms based on location, and I actually call gun-free school zones Harris-Klebold empowerment zones. If you'll recall, at Columbine, there was a trained law enforcement security guard, actually an off-duty cop, on duty at school as their campus security officer. He exchanged shots with one of the killers, and what happened was predictable. He escaped, and the killer retreated inside to go and pick easier, unarmed prey. And why a responsible adult, why a teacher, why an administrator, why a parent cannot be on campus in full possession of their constitutional rights, why the NRA management thinks that that's a good thing to have, I would like for them to defend that. I would like for them to tell us where in the Constitution they see the authority to impose such limits on the people. It's the same. You know, we started this this part of our discussion with Project Safe Neighborhoods. Again, where is the constitutional authority for that? And again, I can point you to speeches by NRA representatives where they promise that Project Exile and Project Safe Neighborhoods are going to reduce crime. They started the program in Richmond. They expanded it to Philadelphia. They put it into Boston. And guess what? In all of those cities, violent crime and murder is through the roof. Last year, Boston recorded a 10-year high in its homicide rate. Richmond is out of control. Philadelphia is begging people for solutions. And again, we prove this time and again. And my question is, I thought we were of the mind that gun control, that is, citizen disarmament, does not work. So now we're being told de facto that, well, some gun control is good, other gun control is bad. I don't buy it. And when I hear that kind of public proclamation, which incidentally is pretty much identical with the position promoted by the Brady campaign, I'm going to challenge it. And if people want to criticize me for that or impugn the motives behind it, all I can tell you is I'm raising a flag, and I don't apologize for that.
In case somebody wants to challenge you on this and impugn your motives, I would suggest they stop by the JPFO site, jpfo.org, and on the front page of our site, they can read a letter. It's a link to a letter from the NRA to one of our members stating very clearly what you've just stated. They support gun control laws. They're opposed to defunding the BATF. Even when there was a chance to do it in 1980, they decided not to do it. And, of course, they're very enthused about Project Exile. And then along with that letter, people can see our response to the NRA. So if anybody thinks that you're wrong, I would suggest they read a letter from the NRA to an NRA member. You said you'd like to talk a little about some of the things you've done to support other pro-gun groups.
As you know, I've done a bit of writing in support of JPFO. And it's kind of funny because my history with your organization goes back many years. I don't even recall how many years, but you're kind of a fledgling organization when I first heard of you. And at the time, I've been involved in various gun organizations for a long time, supporting the ones that that I think are worthy. Gun Owners of America being one of them, but I am an NRA Life member, as I've told you. And at the time, I got involved with another group that is now no longer in existence, called the Lawyers Second Amendment Society. That was Steve Silver and Dan Schultz. And they had a table set up at a, I believe it was a survivalist expo in Long Beach, California. And JPFO had a table there as well. Or actually, as I recall, we shared the table with JPFO. So even though I'm not a lawyer, I was a supporter of Lawyers Second Amendment Society, just as even though I'm not Jewish, I'm a supporter of JPFO. And I shared that table with, I believe it was Nancy Lord, who was then the Libertarian vice presidential candidate. She was there, I recall, and she can correct me if I'm wrong. It was some years ago. And that was really my first experience with anti-Semitism. I thought it was kind of funny. There was a person of, say, skinhead persuasion came by, and I attempted to hand some literature, and I got kind of sneered at and, you know, made to feel like, you know, I was an object of loathing. And that kind of clicked a little light on for me, and it made me explore more of what JPFO is about. And what were the underlying purposes to motivate you to come in and start an organization that, that did something radical and unheard of at the time, which was to raise the truth that gun control is the gateway to genocide. It's the gateway to tyranny.
David, I've always found it disturbing that there are people in the so-called freedom movement at survival shows who would rather hate Jews than aid JPFO in its effort to destroy gun control.
You know, you'll recall I've written a review for Innocence Betrayed. I did an article in the magazine about Len Savage's adventures with BATF, where they essentially tried to declare that he had an illegal machine gun, and on camera I thought it was just brilliant how he disassembled the firearm on camera and proved that it was just, you know, a hang fire from a broken spring, and once you replace the spring, everything is fine. And of course, the ATF agent was there with his mouth open. I thought that was, in any different context, I would have found it humorous, but the fact that people's lives are destroyed by these people coming in and making pronouncements is actually chilling. We deserve better competence than that when our freedom and our lives are at stake. I'm a proud owner of Rebel Fire out of the Gray Zone. I promoted that on my website. I wear the T-shirt. And basically, I do whatever I can in my arguments. I give credit to JPFO whenever I can, whenever I mention the gun control genocide nexus. We just had December 15th came up, and I linked back to your site with your poster for Bill of Rights Day, so thank you for that. Whenever the Sporting Purposes Clause is brought up, and I'll ask you maybe to instruct us a little bit on that. You know, things basically of that nature.
Well, we appreciate all your support. What do you think is really going to happen with Wayne Fincher?
I'm afraid right now, if his health does not improve, that I just hope that there's a trial, because Wayne Fincher has brought up some fascinating arguments that deserve to be explored. But the only problem with that is that the U.S. attorneys prosecuting him have asked the court to prohibit him from arguing both the Constitution and this is a quote, matters of law in his defense. Now, how in the world do you do that? How in the world do you put a man on trial for his life and for his freedom? And the Constitution is the supreme law of the land under which all legal proceedings are supposed to be subordinate. And yet you say you're not allowed to argue matters of law. There's no parity in that. The prosecution is sure going to come in and argue matters of law. Basically, what they're saying is that we can come in and we can do what we want, and you're not allowed to defend yourself. Now, on the plus side, maybe there's a ray of bright light. I've had some people with some inside knowledge contact me, and they've had some positive things to say about the judge. So whether or not this is going to bear out, I can't say, I can't predict. Right now, my main concern is that Mr. Fincher's health be allowed to improve and stabilize to the point where he can stand trial. And at that point, my next hope would be that he will be allowed to present a defense that is just and fair. And I've also heard some good things about his attorney. So I guess his attorney can be a real pit bull when he needs to be a principled man. And so I have high hopes that Mr. Fincher's arguments are sound. I have high hopes that Mr. Fincher's lawyer is a competent attorney with his interests at heart. I have some hope that the judge is going to be fair-minded. And I have pretty much contempt for the U.S. attorneys, which, again, I'm sorry, trace back to the Bush administration, who gun owners put in power for his persecution.
I'm listening to what you're saying about the Fincher case and the attorney who doesn't want the Constitution to be argued in matters of law. As you know, JPFO has done some research in the past showing how the 1938 Nazi gun control laws were used as a model for the 68 Gun Control Act. Now we fast forward, and here we have a federal prosecutor saying, well, you can't argue the Constitution in court or matters of law. Sounds like Nazism to me. David, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. This has been Talking to America. Our guest has been David Kodria. And David, real quick, you want to tell people again the address to your blog?
Yes, Aaron, thank you so much. It's warrenguns.blogspot.com. And thank you, Aaron. I really enjoyed this. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
That's our pleasure. I'm glad we had a chance to do it. This has been Talking to America. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. And remember, if you won't defend your rights, don't complain when you lose them.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of JPFO.org or its members. Talking to America is a production of JPFO.org.